It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as usual, live and in person, and on an absolutely stunningly beautiful Saturday morning. Isn't there a football game or something going on today?
Yeah, Florida State-Clemson.
Ooh, that's a game.
Yeah, it should be.
I think there are others, too.
No, that's it.
No, okay.
It's the only one.
Clemson doesn't seem to be the powerhouse they were as a state.
No.
So I got nothing more to say about that one except
should be a good game.
Okay. Anyway, for all the regulars, welcome back. We're so grateful that you're always here. It's what keeps us going. And if you're new to the show, if somebody told you about it, if you left your radio on or any of those things, then stick around for the hour. We'll talk about all kinds of things. I promise you'll learn something or other in the course of the day. And if you want to talk about what you want to talk about, it's the easiest thing in the world. Just pick up a phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. And we will pick it up right away and talk about whatever it is that's on your mind today. So, as always, lots to talk about. Some of it may seem a little random. That there's an awfully big mix of economics, politics, and dumb ideas, and just all kinds of things going on out there. And they all impact your money. And the thing about this kind of business that we're in is that everybody has concerns and questions about money because you just can't get along without it very well. Or as Tennessee Williams once said, it's okay to be broke when you're young, but not when you're older. So if you're broke and young now, get started and you won't be broke when you're older. Pretty easy to do, I'd say. And since we're all making a lot more money these days, according to some numbers I'm about to bring you, it might be easier than you think. All right, in this week's market, Howard told everybody that we had some thumbs up. We closed on a big bang with the three big indices at all-time records.
Yeah,
what we brought us there?
Earnings really took front and center stage this week because we saw the big five, which is Facebook, which is actually maybe now called Meta. Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google all reported their earnings. The results were kind of mixed for those big companies, and three of the five actually traded down in reaction to their earnings. But the good news is the broader market has been reacting quite positively to earnings this quarter, and it actually was able to overcome those three misses and turn this into a pretty nice week. So a lot of people have been thinking that it's FANG, the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, driving the stock market higher, which in parts of the last 3 or 4 years was true, but that is not the case this week. And I, for one, am very happy to see that. When you have a broader market rallying like it is, that's a much healthier situation than just the biggest stocks gaining. So very pleased to see that. The Dow lagged a bit this week, gained just 0.4%. While the S&P added 1.3% and the NASDAQ, which had been falling behind a bit lately, gained 2.7%. We mentioned last week that we wanted to see the NASDAQ catch up to the other indexes and taking out its previous all-time highs.
I think someone predicted that.
Sometimes you get what you wish for. It happened. Communication services was the only sector that didn't join the rally this week, losing 2.5%. Consumer discretionary, led by the hottest stock around, Tesla, gained 3.72%. Real estate also had a pretty strong week, gaining 2.2%. Year-to-date gains have been the biggest in the energy sector, though, up 57%, if you can believe that.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Technology, which has led the way higher in most recent years, is right in the middle of the pack with gains of 24%. And consumer staples is the worst performing S&P sector, but it's still showing a respectable gain this year of 7.5%. So pretty wide disparity between energy and consumer staples of around 50%. Outside of the S&P, the biggest winner on the week was the cryptocurrency Ethereum, which saw gains over 13%. It was not limited to just this week, though, as it's up almost 50% this month and 175% this year. Pretty crazy.
Pretty lofty. I would be cautious.
I mean, yeah. And what is that based on?
Thin air and wishes?
I have no idea.
I'll tell you one thing. If I owned any, I would have sold enough that I got all my money back either once or one and a half times or double and just play the house money from here.
Yeah, for sure.
What a deal. You have to get enough to cover your taxes and all that stuff. So
yeah.
I wouldn't just take out my costs. I'd add enough to it that you can pay taxes and keep a nice wad in your pocket and to invest in other things. But then let it run. You never know.
I mean, those are some incredible gains.
Yep.
International stocks didn't fare quite as well. There were more losses than gains. Brazil just can't seem to find any positive traction lately. Lost another 2.5% this week. Spain was one of the few bright spots, gaining just over 1%. If you look at commodities, they were generally down this week. Even oil dropped more than 1%, and they've been on a real tear lately. Natural gas did go the other way, though, and gained a bit.
Yeah, oil supplies are inching up instead of down nowadays. So
yeah.
You're going to see a little more price easing, I think.
We did see the 10-year Treasury drop below 1.6%, which caused a minor rally in the credit market. Nothing huge. It wasn't enough to erase the drops or the losses for the year, but it was nice to see a little bit of gain in fixed income.
Yeah, I just don't get it. People who trade longer bonds and I are different people.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it far differently than they do, but nobody asked me.
Yeah, there's really nothing appealing about long-term bonds to me right now.
Not
but
me.
That's
just soaking them up out of everywhere you can think of.
Just
quite
my
incredible.
Opinion. Yeah, I mentioned Tesla, and I think it's worth digging into that stock a little bit more based on the week that it had. Elon Musk had a really good week.
Yes, he did. He didn't even need it, but he got it anyway.
Yeah. Well, he's earned it.
He certainly has.
Tesla reported earnings, and they came in at $1.45 per share versus 98 cents estimated. That's a beat of 48%. Revenue also exceeded expectations, coming in at almost $12 billion versus the estimate of $11.3 billion. Net income exceeded $1 billion in the quarter for the first time ever. The first time Tesla showed a profit was in quarter three of 2018, and it was just over $300 million. Last quarter, in quarter two of this year, their profit was $438 million. That was their previous best. This quarter, their profit jumped by 2.6 times their previous best quarter, to put things in perspective. Needless to say, the stock jumped on that news, gaining over 22% this week and pushing Elon Musk to become the first person on the planet worth more than $300 billion. For comparison, Jeff Bezos is worth a paltry $200 billion, and Warren Buffett, a mere $100 billion.
Hiker.
Yeah. Incredible.
Well, Elon said something very interesting this week in response to a lot of the stuff that's going on in D.C. He said to the world the following: when they're done coming after me, they're coming after you.
I could not agree more.
We'll talk on and off over the next several weeks about the concept of a wealth tax and just what they're trying to do to us. But for now, instead of that, we'll pay some bills, and when we come back, we'll take some calls. So stay with us, the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as usual, we have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. We're doing a retirement question today. How much money, make it in even thousands, does the average 65 and up American spend in a year? Just average. You know, some of us are worse than others. Some of us are probably better than others, but how much on average? I also remind you that the lines are open, 904-222-8255, and we are ready and able to take calls. But let's finish up a little bit more on what's going on out there. Adam just told me something about not just Tesla, but the whole concept of that I did not know about the new hotel that's just been approved for downtown.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Yeah, there was a late addition to the design. I think it might have even gone in after the approval that they were going to put some sort of hydroelectric power that runs on the river, St. John's River Current, which I thought was pretty cool. It's a good idea.
It flows.
It flows 24/7 as far as I know. Why wouldn't you do that? It seems like a no-brainer.
It's not like solar. It doesn't go under at night.
No.
Just keeps moving.
Keeps going, yep.
I thought that was absolutely brilliant. And we were discussing the concept of the electric cars and who's a good candidate for one and who isn't. Apparently there's a lot of good candidates based on what Musk is selling these days.
It's crazy. We were just remarking that it used to be pretty unique to see a Tesla on the road, and now if you don't see one, it's kind of surprising.
Go to a four-way stop, there's going to be a Tesla in there nowadays,
sure.
It seems. It's truly amazing. Back to the market for a moment. An interesting inversion took place this past week, where the bullish sentiment and the bearish sentiment turned around. Usually the bulls outnumber the bears. Right now the bears are outnumbering the bulls. Now, those of you who've listened to us for a long time understand this makes us very happy.
It does. It does. When people, individual investors, get worried, the market tends to go up. And while that seems counterintuitive, that is just how it works. It just goes to show you that individual investors most often get it wrong. That's why stock picking is a losing game. That's why making changes in your portfolio usually nets you less money than not making changes. And there's just so many rules of this career that we have that we see. And we see all the mistakes, and they're all driven by that same thing. Most people get it wrong most of the time.
Yep. And yet the market itself, if you look over a period of time, is very prescient. It'll be, if the market were to go down today, it would be the market signaling that in 6 months, 9 months, or a year, things are not going to be very good. And on that kind of long-term forecasting, they're very good. But you're seeing now we're buying into the weekend in this case. That means 6 months, 9 months, 12 months out, people are expecting things to be pretty good. And based on that inversion of the bulls and the bears, there's a statistic that says the next 1 year return after this happens is 14.61% in the S&P. The average return on the S&P, 9.45. These numbers go back to 1987. So that's over 5 points better. Just, it's not cause and effect. You always have to be sure you don't understand or don't imply that something causes something else, but it's certainly a correlation, and it's statistically very, very relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam and I have been bullish, most of you know this, out through the end of this year, which isn't all that far anymore, but it seems to be pushing into next year a bit. Of course, there's so much going on right now in terms of negotiations and bills and overspending and all that stuff that You got to kind of keep your eyes and ears open and take it day to day as to what you think is going to be the longer term. But right now, I would say this market is in excellent condition.
I would agree. And there's even some signs, if you look around deep enough, that some of the problems are easing. In the Ford earnings call, they actually mentioned that semiconductors are getting the sourcing is getting easier.
Yeah, I just heard that from you this week, too, and I was very surprised.
Yeah, in fact, what did they say? The revenue, net income, adjusted earnings before interest and taxes, cash flow from operations, and adjusted free cash flow were all sharply higher from the second to the third quarter of 2021, driven by significant increases in semiconductor availability and wholesale vehicle shipments from quarter two. So what they didn't say the problem's gone, but they said it got a lot better in quarter three.
Cool.
So that's really good news.
That whole supply chain thing has been having a big impact on a lot of people and things, and it's not going to get solved overnight, but you know they're working on it long-term because there's some massive manufacturing plants going in this country.
Yep, there are, and that's going to take a while to come online, but at least help is on the way.
Yep. Well, here's one that'll probably help Mr. Musk a little bit. Saudi Arabia is starting a big electric vehicle push in Riyadh. Now, Does this seem funny to anybody else?
I don't see any irony there at all.
the people, they'll just sell any amount of oil you want as long as they can get their price. And they're going to produce electric vehicles.
Yeah, it's the wave of the future. Like it or not, it is here.
Well, one thing that is not necessarily understood by all is that while those vehicles don't pollute, the electricity production does. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Excellent. You?
Just fine. I'll take a stab at your trivia question.
Sure.
Is that per person?
It says the average American in the literature I got this from, so I'm going to say yes.
Okay, I would say 44,600.
You are a little low.
Okay.
But you've bracketed it out very well.
Okay.
And we appreciate it.
All right.
Anything else going on today?
No, just listening to your show.
Okay, well, that's good enough for me.
Okay.
Thank you.
You guys have a good day.
Thanks. You too.
All right.
Take care. Bye.
I do not have a name on this call. I apologize. So, caller, welcome. Who are you?
Bill from Orange Park. How's our financial gurus? And I'm going to take a pot at spot. Yeah, at your. I'm going to say 48.5.
You are a little bit high.
Oh, I was going to say 47.5, but it's Final Jeopardy, the only one answer. So, in all respect to Alex Trebek, you guys are the Alex Trebek gurus of finance. So, you know, the wisdom that one thing I really appreciate, and I probably speak for more than myself. You know, I'm over the hill gang and plus, and we're all on borrowed time, but what you guys go through during the week, you bring a little bits and pieces on Saturday. And I'll tell you what, I wish we could comp you an extra hour of time, because it's worth it. And it's just like, I had a pension fund, meeting was canceled because we didn't have a quorum in place. So, you know, I have to wait another month for that. But, I mean, y'all are super. I mean, it's just, I like to ask a question if I can get a short answer. If no answer, it's okay. What made you get into finance?
It's funny. I've got that in my notes today.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about that.
I think we were at the same Boatyard Marina somewhere.
Seems that way, doesn't it? Yeah, I've actually got a little background that, I got it from doing some research on someone else, but it reminded me so much of me that I decided we'd talk about it a little bit today.
So you got your biography before your biography. That's pretty good.
Exactly. All right.
Hey, I don't want to keep you because there's probably other people want to call. But, you know, even if I'm on my hospital bed at Mayo or the VA in Gainesville, I always listen to y'all. And I kind of bribe the staff to make sure they can bring on me iPods so I can hear you guys. Okay?
We could not be happier, and we appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
You're welcome. All right, bye-bye.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show, as always.
Well, thanks so much. What's up today?
I'd like to take a shot at the trivia question.
Sure.
But I also had another question. Maybe you could answer it after the break.
Sure.
I hear this talk about SPAC, S-P-A-C, uh-huh. And I have no idea what that means. I'm watching, you know, CNBC all the time, and they talk about this, and it's a mystery to me, so maybe you could answer that after
it
the
stands
break.
For Special
Purpose
Acquisition Company.
Yeah.
Which is a very unusual thing, and you are smart to say handle it after the break, because when we get into it, I'll start rendering opinions, and you don't want to hear all that with no more time to hear it out, do you? All right, what's your guess?
46,500.
Well, I tell you what, you are a winner.
Yeah, it wasn't too hard. Those guys were real good to me.
Thanks, Leroy and Phil.
Yeah, you guys.
It's right on 46, but I have $500 up and down on it, so 46.5 is right on the high number.
Oh, wow.
Perfect, so, huh?
Hey, I want to tell you, too, the gift cards, I think it's called Buenos. That food is awesome. I don't want to
really?
Give
good.
Anybody a plug, but the food there is terrific.
Good. Oh, nice. But Bono's, I think, is what...
Bono's.
Yeah,
Bono's
Barbecue.
Oh, yeah, they've been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Yep. We have the address and everything, Adam?
Yeah, I believe so. This is the usual Ron.
Yep.
Yep.
All right.
That's me.
All right. The great. Then we will put you on hold. You can just listen after the break, and I'll start up on the other topic. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it so much, guys. Thanks again.
Bye. All right. Well, we do have the music plan. We are going to talk about it's sort of my takeoff on what Adam's been doing with his Millionaire series, because I think this guy has made it pretty well. And how he got started and how I got started in the business are a little bit different, but definitely related. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Lines are open, 904-222-8255, if you want to talk to us. Meanwhile, we had a question that we're willing and able to discuss, though I would caution everyone, neither one of us would hold ourselves out as an expert in the field.
No, it's actually, what is a SPAC? And a SPAC stands for a Special Purpose Acquisition Company. And essentially what it is it's a company that's formed just to do an IPO and to raise funds. And there's no actual operations of the company. They don't do anything other than look for other companies to buy or merge with. And so what you're doing essentially is it's almost like venture capital. You put your money into this company that's run by someone that hopefully you trust will be able to go out and do a deal to invest that money that all these investors have put into the SPAC and buy a company that is undervalued or merge with a company that's undervalued, usually a private company. And it's a way of taking that private company public through merger or acquisition. And then the idea is that they will make it more valuable and your investment will gain in the stock market. And then you'll be able to sell out for more money than what you initially invested in the first place.
And so, this all got really heated up, what, earlier this year?
Yeah, or last year even,
Might have been last year.
There were all the rage, and a lot of them actually fell through, couldn't get deals done. They're just kind of languished on the market. So you put your money in, and then this company doesn't do anything. So it's really not worth anything except for the cash that they have on hand. And if they can't get a deal done, it turns out that's not a great investment. But when they do get a deal done, that may or may not be a great investment, depending on what they pay, what they buy, how the company does that they buy, if they're able to turn it around, if they're able to improve the value. It's a very risky way of doing things, but investing in general is risky. So, you just have to make sure that you trust that management team that you're putting your money with to get this deal done.
And recently it's become a red hot issue.
So Trump recently used a SPAC to take his sort of media company public. And I'm not sure how that's gone. I really haven't looked into the numbers. I just know that it made.
Well, I know
news.
It hit the stock, the target stock, up nicely for a while. But I don't follow it either because I don't invest in things like this because I can't explain them to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes.
But yeah, it's been a hot topic, and then Trump sort of revived it by doing what he did with his media company. So it's probably something you'll hear a little bit more about. It's a good way of doing things if you are if you don't have another way of raising money to take or to target a private company. I think it's a good way to get public without going through that that IPO process as well. So there's a lot of reasons that it's a good idea, but the risks are real, and you should be very, very careful before putting any money with one.
These are the toys that you get to play with after your first few tens of millions.
Agreed. It's for wealthy investors and not for people who are trying to save for their retirement.
Now, even if they found a way for the average guy to get in, like an ETF of SPACs or something like that, which they may have.
It might exist. I don't even know.
Yeah, and the reason I don't know is that I frankly don't care.
No, it's not something I would invest in.
Yeah, and when you're a highly regulated advisory, as we are, you got to be careful what you say and do, but particularly what you do. There are a lot of people out there in our business who are very slimy, and there are a lot of people out there who used to be in our business because they were slimy, and they get caught.
I mean, I must read 2 to 5 articles a week about ex-brokers and financial people who are disbarred or whatever they call it in our industry, shunned by the industry, fined, put in jail. it's pretty common. Yeah, just be careful.
As the Kingston Trio said, when will they ever learn?
They won't, probably.
I think that was the last line of the song, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Never learn. Well, okay, that's the one. Two, why, how did I get into this business? I think Adam's entry into it was pretty logical because he'd been watching my progress over a long time.
Well, as they say, there's more to that story, too.
There is, too. Yeah.
I actually, after I got my MBA, I had spent some time in my MBA taking finance classes, was really interested in this business. There was, back then, in the early 2000s, there was not the easy entry points that there are today into the industry. You either went to a wirehouse or broker, or there was...
They'd hand you the Manhattan phone book and a desk and a dial-up phone and
start calling. Call your friends, call your family.
And boy, the first thing I thought of there was, man, would I like to get called, because I would love to do financial business with someone I've never heard from or of.
Exactly.
Who may or may not have just graduated from college.
Yeah, and I actually had an interview or two lined up, and I didn't go to them because I just got bad feelings from all of them, and it just didn't seem like something I was interested in. And so I went and pursued finance in other corporations instead. I worked for several large companies, Home Depot and another one called Rinker, and then Cemex in their finance departments. And so I just went into finance that way instead. So, and then eventually joined my dad.
And by the way, I would recommend, not everybody's going to be able to do this, but I would recommend, if you're looking for an advisor, that you look for someone who hasn't always been in this business. This is, of course, a little personal, because Adam and I did the same thing. Go out and get some experience in business doing this and that and the other thing, and then you have a little better understanding of what people do and what they mean, because I raised all the kids telling them one thing. There's a million ways to make a buck, and you probably can't name 150 of them.
No, it's true. There's a million ways to become a millionaire, and you probably can't name 10 of them.
Exactly. Well, there was a young man years ago by the name of Ed Slott. Ed went to college. I don't know what his background was. I don't know if his parents were highly educated or anything. But he went to college and got an accounting degree. And after that, he studied for and received his CPA, Certified Public Accountant. And he developed a tax practice. And the tax practice, as you all probably know, can be pretty lucrative. It's very stressful because there are a lot of deadlines in it, but most of us prefer / need help on our taxes because it's quite complicated and so on. So he practiced his CPA business, tax business, for quite a long time, and he kept noticing a pattern that the people who came to him had a lot of things that they could have done better, but it's too late. But the only thing I can think of that you can do that makes any sense after the year is over is you can still contribute to IRAs and some other things for last year. But in general, nobody was planning. Everybody was just doing their taxes. And he, being the obviously adventuresome mind type, decided that this was not right, and he was going to fix it. So he started studying up on tax law and the different forms of investments and so on. And I don't know exactly, what would you call his business today, sort of a teaching business, more or less?
Yeah, I mean, he's really branded himself around that central issue that I'm sure you're about to mention. But he picked one topic and became the absolute industry expert on it. He's the go-to for anything related to that topic. And, so he answers all questions related to that topic.
And I'll tell you, the easiest way to understand exactly what he's branded himself is to look at his website, which is irahelp.com. He is the acknowledged expert worldwide, in every profession, every occupation. There are people that are head and shoulders above the other one. In the overall big planning scheme of the world, Michael Kitsis is the guy that Adam and I would probably admire the most of anybody. But when it comes to retirement planning, retirement rules, There is no second Ed Slott that I've ever found, although there is a woman named Denise Applegate or Applebee, I'm not sure, that I also follow once in a while because she is really, really good and very insightful. But Ed Slott is the acknowledged, by me at least, genius of the whole thing. I have read every newsletter. He does a monthly one. I have read everyone cover to cover for so many years, I can't remember when I started. So that's his story and development and so on. Mine is a little bit different, and I'll tell you about it. It starts a long, long time ago, right after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have been talking about one of my personal heroes, a fellow by the name of Ed Slott, who is my guru when it comes to things retirement plan oriented. The reason Slott's been in the news lately is kind of interesting. He came out with something that said, all of a sudden on Wednesday night, the Congress, the part that's still doing things, bad things, but still doing things, they eliminated a lot of provisions that were going to affect IRAs. And his theory on this, which I have every reason to believe is probably correct, is that these changes that Congress was proposing to the IRAs were not there to help me, you, anybody else. They were not revenue neutral. In other words, they were put in there to make money. But as these things are getting closer and closer to going to the presidential desk, they thought they'd be a little controversial, and they've had enough controversy, so they pulled them out. They still want to do those things, but they pulled them out. So he sort of explained that. Also, let's see, he had one more little thing here. Even though your clients need them to go near taxes, most advisors are not very good about taxes. So part of the thing you have to learn, you have to do a course on taxes to become a CFP, but people still know woefully little about taxes.
Yeah, and it's really hard to know a lot about taxes.
It is.
Because even if you know a lot, there's still a lot more to know.
Right, and we can't practice tax law. But if you're a good tax planner, it really helps the clients. So, another thing he said, there are 500,000 people in this country holding themselves out as financial advisors. You know what percentage of them, he says, are really competent in areas such as retirement plans and taxes and overall planning?
No clue.
1%. That is dismal, people. That is absolutely dismal. All right, let's back up a little bit. I got married in 1972. That's quite a long time ago. And we were moving into our first apartment, and my wife had a few boxes of books that she brought home from college and that kind of thing. And as she was unpacking, she found one called Personal Finance, asked me if I'd ever read it, and I said no. And she, knowing the geek that she married, loved things like money and more money and even more money, and I had a math background. So she said, read this. I know you're going to like it. And I did, and it was basically a precursor of the entire CFP course. They talked about insurance and investments and Wall Street and this and that and the other thing. And I read it right through and was very, very captivated by the whole thing. Couldn't understand how I went to college and never did that course. But, of course, it's optional and didn't happen. Anyway, I got interested then, and I never lost my interest for such things. But I was a computer programmer. I did that, and interestingly, one of the things that I was programming was the payroll system. So I learned quite a bit about that sort of thing and how the taxes applied there. So I spent a couple of years there. And then I got the offer that I couldn't refuse. My wife's father had a small management consulting firm in Racine, Wisconsin. And one of the young guys that worked for him left. And he asked me if I wanted the job. And I said, what are the terms? And he said, well, I can't pay you very much and there are no benefits. Well, who wouldn't take that?
Sign me up.
Yeah. So I did. And on day one, I walked in It was 1974. He handed me a book and said, read it and memorize it. It was called ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974.
Did he want you to quit?
No. He wanted me to learn it, actually. Because part of the practice that he had was we consulted on pensions and profit-sharing plans for small manufacturers, mostly trying to keep them from going into a pension system, which, you know, they would later hate anyway. But I had to know a lot about, in particular, profit-sharing plans and the laws around these things, because ERISA plans are all highly regulated, and profit-sharing and 401 fall under that. So I did, and I spent 4 years learning a lot and consulting some really fine little companies, actually, where they've made a lot of money and they made a lot of contributions to their plans and people were happy. So I learned a bunch there. And 4 years into that, I got a chance to buy one of the small companies that he consulted for and wound up doing that. So then I got to actually manage people, 401ks and payrolls and all that stuff. So I learned a bunch more and on and on and on until the late 80s when it was, the handwriting was on the wall for small manufacturers in this country that China was eating our lunch and we were going to be left holding the bag. So I decided to get out of that. And at the same time, it seemed like a very obvious time to get out of the cold weather. So in 1992, we moved to Florida, almost 30 years now, just so hard to believe. And I didn't really have a job. I didn't really have any income. But I did have something I really liked to do, and that was listening to radio programs about personal finance and money. So I got very, very involved with that and decided that that sounded like fun. Certified financial planner, right up my alley. Didn't really want to be a lawyer, didn't really want to be an accountant, but the CFP dealt with people and all kinds of issues, that this is exactly what I was born to do. So went back to school, got trained, took the exam, passed, and then I went out and inserted myself into a job that I had targeted, and I had no money and no income and no background in it. So it, not only that, but it was the 1st of October after 9/11. If there's ever been a worse day to start a financial practice than the 1st of October after 9/11, somebody please tell me. But through a lot of just work and wait and learn and build it up slowly, it started to become A, fun, and B, profitable. So one thing led to another, and we got to a point where Adam had joined me because he was all qualified by then. And we decided it was time to take everything the two of us had learned, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and start our own company, which with all the good, none of the bad and the ugly. So we wrote out just a simple, sketchy sort of a rule sheet for us. And one of them was, we live at the beach, we're going to practice at the beach. That was one. We're not going to be sophisticated three-piece suit people because in our business, unlike many others where it's not what it is, it's what it looks like that counts. In ours, it's not what it looks like, although it looks really nice. It's what it is that matters. So we got in there and took a long time to get our business license from the state. Adam wound up writing an email to then-Governor Scott saying, now our application's been in there for a long, long time. We haven't heard anything. And by the way, my dad and I both voted for you. Twice. Bingo, that got it done. So they finally called and gave us a license, and we started the practice and started the radio show at the same time. That's what, seven. We're in year seven,
yeah.
Now.
Yep.
So February 1st will be the end of our seventh year on the radio. And one thing led to another, and business grew and grew and grew. And here we are, happy as a clam, and we're doing fine. This is not a business that's going to make you one of those millionaires that people talk about unless you happen to hit on a good investment that I don't know about. But it will make you very comfortable, and it's, to me, it's just more fun than a human being has a right to have.
Yeah, and to be fair, you could absolutely grow this into something that will be millions and millions of dollars, but that is not our plan. Our plan is to stay small, keep meeting with all of our clients. I don't want to lose that personal touch with our clients. I don't want to just manage people. I want to keep this like it is.
So we wound up where we are, as most people would, being a little bit by accident, but largely by a lot of thinking and designing and planning. And one thing, as I say, led to another, and here we are. And well, the other thing is we had contacted this radio station, and we said we want a Saturday morning slot, a good one, and there was nothing available. So just at the nick of time, one of the shows, the 10 o'clock show, whatever it was back then, decided they were not going to carry on. So they called us and said, how about 10 o'clock Saturday? Done.
Been here ever since.
Been here ever since. We have not yet missed a show except for the 2 days they wouldn't let us come in because of the hurricane evacuations. Unfortunately, we'll be off Christmas and New Year's. But other than that, we'll be right here. So tune in next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.